CliffCentral.com.
All right. There's a little Khan and Paz with Long Shot. Very nice. This morning, it's, what is it? It's the 6th of July. I see America just celebrated the 4th of July, and everybody ignored everything that they were told to not do the whole fireworks thing. And, you know, they basically just gave the government the middle finger.
Welcome to the theme of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, giving government the middle finger is the theme of 2020, it seems.
Yep.
Very exciting. All right, so a couple of things that we've got to do in the next hour. We're going to speak to someone called Sean Fuchs. Sean has written a book called Fush, which we'll tell you about in a little while. He's a teacher, and he's written a book as an educator and leader in some of South Africa's most renowned schools. He's recently penned his biggest lessons and his life story in his memoir, which is called Fush, letting readers in on how he's anything but a stereotype. So I suppose we need people like this because, you know, during a time of crisis like we're going through, there are very few people who are willing to step up to the plate. Most people are terrified of making the wrong decision, so they make no decision at all.
Can I give you something random to chew on about Sean?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, he's led several big schools in the country. You know, he's worked at Crawford and whatnot. And I was chatting to him yesterday. I had to have a technical call with him, what he'll expect for the interview, how it will all go down. He is like a typical principal like guy. It's very big and broad and strong. I actually felt so weird calling him Sean. I wanted to be like, sir, yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. I'll be awakened on time, sir. They're just some of those people who are, I don't know, I just can't see them being anything but a teacher or a principal, and he's one of them.
Yeah. It's funny, I spoke to my former deputy principal a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. He wanted, it was the weirdest thing, he wanted to just chat to me about something that was going on at the school and needed, I suppose, just a voice from someone in the media because some of what they were dealing with was media related. So it was so weird to have a conversation with him, and I called him by his first name, and it was so normal. Because it's been a while for me. I mean, you know, school only finished for you like what, last year or whatever.
It's actually been like 6 years now. Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's probably easier for me than it would be for you. Very strange.
Yeah, it is weird. You know, I have some of my teachers on like my Facebook, and now we follow each other on Instagram. And I'm like, what? Mrs. So and so actually has a social life and she drinks. What?
Yeah,
it's still an adjustment.
Yeah, we used to have teachers who were so cool with us. Like, we had one teacher who would go to gym with all of us when we went to the Sharper Image.
See, now in 2020, in the midst of some eyebrow-raising activity, that sounds a little weird to me.
Okay, well, thank God
a
for that.
A teacher who would go to gym with kids.
I thought I was the only one.
Okay.
If my teacher was going to gym with me, I'd be like, you know what? This is where we need to get the parents involved. I need to tell someone about you. You're a creep.
Just a little. Hey, yeah. I have a list of some of the alleged creeps that, because Ghislaine might actually speak about.
Bring it
court.
On. Let's go. This is good stuff. All right, so this is Ghislaine Maxwell, who's Jeffrey Epstein's partner in crime, so to speak.
Yeah, this is like a top 10 list you really don't want to be part of at
Hell
all.
No. Okay, go for it.
Yeah, so there are some names who we've heard and we've discussed in the past couple of weeks to end, you know, Prince Andrew, Bill Clinton, blah, 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 blah. And then there's some names who we won't know, but someone who's like a billionaire hedge fund owner. His name is Glenn Dubin. And he's supposedly this very accomplished One half of a Manhattan super couple who's been linked to Ghislaine and Jeffrey. And there's also someone who founded a breast cancer center who is also linked to them. But, you know, these are people who we aren't really interested in because we don't know particularly.
Tell us the famous names.
So, some interesting people. Larry Summers. Larry Summers we know as someone, Sheryl Sandberg, you know, who is of Facebook fame.
Yeah.
Sheryl Sandberg says Larry Summers is her mentor. Larry's incredible. Larry's background even includes Harvard as the president.
Sorry, you broke up for a second there. Say that again.
Sorry, Larry Summers headed up Harvard University as its president at a time.
Okay.
So you think if Larry was also part of Jeffrey's circle, then who else at Harvard might be involved in this as well?
Jeez. Okay, that's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
The president of Harvard. The president of Harvard is not a nobody.
Look, like Larry Summers gave Jeffrey Epstein $30 million to create Harvard's Epstein program for mathematical biology and evolutionary dynamics. Like, what does that even mean? This is all very twisted. There's also the founder of Victoria's Secret, who is also alleged to have been very close with Jeffrey Epstein. Back in 1987, the founder of Victoria's Secret hired Jeffrey Epstein to be his finance guy. So his name is Leslie Wexner. He's obviously a billionaire nowadays. But you think about, what did Jeffrey know back in 1987? Because back then, Jeffrey was only just a former high school math teacher who had left high school a few years ago to now just work in Wall Street. So you're saying, like, in 2-3 years, someone has commanded so much respect after merely being a high school teacher. Now you look at Victoria's Secret and you go, what else was really going on there?
All these people with too much money and time on their hands that are bored and looking for the next best thrill.
There's also a former New Mexico governor. His name is Bill Richardson. He's now 72 years old. There's also a former U.S. senator. His name is George Mitchell, who's now 86 years old. Look, these people are trying to just, you know, enjoy their...
Old-ass people.
They're gone jail. They're going to spend their last years in jail.
Look, they're trying to just enjoy their retirement and their last couple of years on Earth, and now they're probably going to be involved in the sex scandal. Now, particularly in Senator Mitchell's case.
Imagine being 80-something years old and now you're in a sex scandal. You're on Epstein's list and you're in your 80s.
Quite ironic because back in 2 years ago, this is the year Jeffrey Epstein was about to get arrested. This senator was overseeing this compensation fund that also had allegations of taking this money that was meant to go to workers, but rather was piling it into this sex ring. So, I mean, he was sitting in a bench making all of these decisions, talking about what is right and what isn't right. Yeah, but meanwhile, behind the scenes, he was being linked to Jeffrey.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Some rotten
So
people.
Look, there's a former Israeli prime minister who's also alleged to have deep, deep workings with Jeffrey Epstein. The famous lawyer Alan Dershowitz is also alleged to have some involvement here. The list goes on and on. I just think... We're going to see some very interesting names here. Even if these aren't people we know, they'll have a lot of power and a lot of influence.
So much to take in here. What a year.
Their lives are going to be changed forever.
What a year. I just want everything to just go back to normal, please. Can we just have normal stuff happening again?
Too damn late. And this is only just a report, though. Someone said that they heard Ghislaine Maxwell appear via video call in court on Thursday as she was arrested. Supposedly, Ghislaine was breaking down in tears and she was screaming, "Why is this happening?" And Leanne, to answer your question, we probably won't be seeing any of this at all because the court has ruled out any visuals from being released out to the public, but we will be hearing audio from it. So, yeah. She's
like a podcast.
listen to the Ghislaine Maxwell in Court podcast. Yeah. And she was allegedly screaming, "Why is this happening? How is this happening? How could this happen?" She was supposedly crying her eyes out.
Well, because you made it happen, girl. You know?
Yeah.
You were very, very busy for a long time. Picking and selecting and grooming and
I don't feel sorry. I'm not feeling sorry for her.
No ways.
Yeah, I really don't care about Ghislaine Maxwell's feelings if she broke down. I saw they arrested one of the leaders of CHOP, Chaz. You know, Chaz was that place in Seattle that that a bunch of left wing retards established as their perfect state. They declared it.
I just saw him crying.
Yeah, he was crying. He tried to run away from the cops. The cops caught him eventually because they've dismantled Chaz. It doesn't exist anymore. I love that story, by the way. It's just the perfect illustration of where millennial left-wing wokeism is going to eventually take you if you go all the way. And they all lived in tents. It was disgusting. They're kind of shitting where they slept and everything was graffitied. And they basically just... All these people with blue and purple and pink and orange and green hair all hanging around together, trying to like solve the world's problems of their wokeness. And, you know, they had this hierarchy that they set up inside of Chaz, which was more like racial discrimination than apartheid. And they thought they were doing all the right things. You know, this is what their professors at university had taught them.
So everything.
This leader. Eventually, while the thing's crumbling around him, this leader of, in inverted commas, of CHOP or Chaz, decides to run from the police, and the police catch him. And he's screaming and crying like a little bitch. Such a tough guy. "We don't need the police. We don't need you. Get out of our place. This is an autonomous zone. We're going to run this properly the way that the US government never has." And they capture him, and he's just screaming for his mommy.
Right, yeah.
The way you described it, it sounds like everything you one wouldn't like about attending a music festival.
Oh, it is.
The tents, and then you get those drunken high people who think they know everything.
A lot of people who haven't showered, they're all gathered in these community rooms sitting on beanbags.
Exactly. It is precisely. You've just summarized it beautifully. It's like all the things I would hate and most sensible, clean, decent people would hate. All rolled into like consistent livelihood.
A lot of kombucha drinking.
Exactly.
Right. Someone probably has a portable blender that they were using just to have green juices all the time.
Ugh. It's gross, right? It's gross.
Wait, so Chaz didn't even last a month.
No, it didn't even get a month in. It was such a shit show.
And people had literally packed up their lives and moved there.
Yeah. They had people from all over certainly the West Coast of America, who decided this is where utopia is. You know, no one has possession. Imagine no possessions. It's basically the words of John Lennon's Imagine, writ into real life.
Thoughts and prayers, Yoko Ono's ill, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Yoko Ono's ill? Stop everything. Forget about Chaz. Carry on, Sia, as you were.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. No. She's supposedly wheelchair-bound these days. She's ailing. She's 87. You think about it. She's
been around a long time, old Yoko.
Mm-hmm. We don't really know what her illness is at this stage, but she requires round-the-clock care.
I know what her illness is just by listening to her songs. She hasn't been on planet Earth for 2,000 years.
Yeah, she has been a little bit with the fairies for a long time.
And people close to her say she never leaves her apartment. She rarely leaves it, rather.
Neither does anyone.
Well, good point. John
tried to leave the apartment once, and look what happened to him.
Oh, no.
Gareth.
Oh, Jacob, just going down to the store, buying a couple of baked beans in a can. Oh, Mark then, David Chapman, how are you?
I'm not, yeah, Leah, no, I also John, feel uneasy.
Don't worry, go down to the store, no problem.
The last time we saw her at a massive public event or appearance was in May of 2018.
Was that when she opened up some art exhibition and sang one of her songs?
No, sorry, I lie. It was at a women's march last year in Columbus Circle in New York. Yeah, it was some women's march. And yeah, nowadays she's either confined to a wheelchair or she walks with great difficulty using a cane, or she has to lean on one of her caregivers. So shame, man.
Imagine being that caregiver. And she says, I got a song.
And I think she's running out of
money.
I
want you here to hear my song. Oh, please, Miss Ono, please, just, I'm here to wipe your ass and keep you in your wheelchair. Please, can we not do a song today? No, I've been writing all night.
But the thing with Yoko is you wouldn't know if she's screaming out in pain or if she's singing.
Right. That's what screws up the poor workers. They come in to help.
I'm sorry, that was horrible.
Those poor, poor care workers don't know whether they've got to call the ambulance or whether they've just got to suffer through the song. Are you okay? Are you okay, Yoko? I'm fine. Don't worry about me. I sing you favorite song I wrote yesterday.
People are alleging that she's slowly running out of money because she's starting to also sell some prized possessions of hers and John's. Past couple of years. Yeah.
I thought he would have left her with plenty.
I don't know.
I mean, she's got that their apartments in that famous the Dakota apartment building.
Yes, that yeah.
And she I'm sure had plenty of money. She would have got John's share of the Beatles catalog in the beginning before they sold it to Michael Jackson. Paul McCartney is a billionaire just from music.
Oh, good times there.
Billionaire. So, I mean, Yoko, when they say running out of money, maybe she's also just getting rid of stuff because you know how old people get too. They don't want to have too much stuff around them. So they start giving it away instead of waiting for their will to distribute it. They start distributing it themselves to people they care about. Maybe that's what she's doing. I'm gonna go to New York next month and go and make friends with Yoko and grab a whole bunch of John Lennon memorabilia, and then I'll have it.
This is the time. This is the time because
let me hear some of your great songs. I'll put in some earplugs and I'll sit there the whole fucking day, and then I'll get some free stuff.
Rummage through the basement.
Oh yeah, have John old guitar. Yes, thank you. That would be nice. Oh, you want the original score for John Lennon's song? Yes, please, give that to me too. What else you got in there, Yoko? Oh, wait, I got rooms and rooms of stuff. Come help yourself. Just listen to four more songs. All right, but only four.
Oh.
Put those earplugs back in. How many more you got to go? Only three more. Okay, that's fine. I'll just sit over here.
Look, I'd say it's a small price to pay.
And bring the U-Haul around the front of the building. I got some stuff to take out.
This source also alleges that her closest friend nowadays is Sean, her son with John.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sean, they have dinner with Sean two or three times a week. And occasionally, this is the treat, Sean brings his mother out as a guest star in his band.
Oh, poor Sean. You know, this is such a terrible way for John Lennon's legacy to be. You see, this is what we were talking about the other day, about how the next generation never, ever really is as good as the previous one. Remember we were talking about this? I mean, the highlight of Sean's music career is when he brings out his old mother, and we know how her music sounds. I'll bet you he's only going for dinner there every week because he's worried she's giving away all the stuff.
That's what's happening.
Oh, Mom. I told you not to give away Dad's ashes.
Oh, no.
But I got $45 for them.
You still have an accent after living in the States
no,
for so many years.
In my head, she's got an accent.
Oh.
It's probably so racist. But when I, you know, because she, Yoko Ono, The reason that I feel the way I do about her is because even though I wasn't alive when it all happened, this happened way before I was born. I loved the Beatles, right? And the Beatles were and remain one of the greatest bands of all time. And who broke them up? Yoko Ono. I mean, John must have been weak, okay, to start with. But he fell in love with her, and then he said, okay, guys, I don't want to do this Beatles thing anymore. I'm going to do my own thing with my new wife, Yoko.
Yeah, she definitely got into his head.
Sorry about that. The accent, I didn't go very Liverpudlian. I went all Yorkshire for a second there. But yeah, so in my head, Yoko's an evil witch. And awesome. I will never forgive her. And her music proves she's an evil witch in my mind.
Wow. So this apartment that she still lives in now in the Dakota is the same apartment that she lived in way back when with John.
Yes. That's what I'm telling you. No one leaves.
Nine rooms.
Huh. She most of them full of shit that I'm going to inherit, Sia.
Hey, there's also another unit in an adjacent building that she only uses for visitors. You see, now this is the difference between being rich and being wealthy. Mm. When you have a separate apartment just for visitors, now that's wealthy. And then she has two small one-room spaces of apartments that she uses for staff. How fabulous.
Well, that's Jeez, that does sound good.
That's yeah. You know you're rich in America when you have apartments for your staff.
And then in the same building, she has an office on the first floor that John used to use as a recording studio.
Well, there we go.
How nice to have a separate apartment completely for visitors.
Yeah.
You never have to make sure that your own home's spick and span. Yeah, surprise visitors aren't a problem.
They never get to ruin your perfect house, you know. That to me would be ideal. I'd love to have two houses right next to each other that look exactly the same, but the one you let other people into and the other one is just for you.
Yes.
Anyway, so here are some more comments. Sandile says, there goes Sia, referring to people by their first names, like their buddies.
As in Yoko.
Sandile, what would you... Oh, sorry, let me not even call him Sandile. Oh, great Oracle, Mr. Wisdom Sandile, what would you like me to call them? Gosh.
Hey, guys, I haven't listened in a while. I feel so bad. I moved house and had a premature baby, 5 weeks prem. My wife had the baby, obviously, not me. Plus, I've been trying to keep our business alive through this mayhem. Anyway, I've missed you guys. That's from Carl. Hey, thanks, Carl.
That's hectic.
Good to hear from you, dude. And I hope your baby's doing okay.
Mm.
You know, five weeks prem is quite, that's quite a lot. Hey, guys, Damon really, really hates being called woke. I tweeted him once and got blocked. Clearly hit a nerve there. Just a heads up. Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, we've got Damon, some ammo now.
That's from Vincent. Damon is pretty sensitive, actually, you'll discover.
Yeah.
You should cover John Lennon in Blind History, rather an unremarkable person outside of the Beatles. I don't know, Marianne. I think he was quite interesting. I mean, he was a genius, there's no doubt. And then somebody else is asking here, Sia, another Sia, not Sia Sangweni, saying, morning, guys, where is Uma Bubulaleleyo? Well, he's only doing the show on Thursdays now, as from last week. That's how it's going to be. So, Sia, I'm sorry if you were a massive fan of Mbulelo. You'll have to just wait for Thursday.
Mm. Or you listen to him every evening.
No. And then I got a couple of messages from people saying Cabello was just on a shit signal and that's why he couldn't hear us properly. And then he himself messaged me and said I was on a shit signal. So,
so confirmation there of the shit signal.
Yes, very important that we get this right. So that's one of the messages this morning, one of many that we receive on a daily basis. You can join in the conversation, 079-748-2090. All right, what else is happening in the world? What do you want to get into? Huh? Leanne, Sia, what's on your mind?
Did you hear about these wretched, disgusting, horrible, the Ender's Nigh flying snakes?
Oh, my God.
Hold on a second.
Do they have wings?
Wait a second. We spoke last week about the Coke boars. You know, these pigs in the forests in France that discovered, like, tons and tons of cocaine and became the most dangerous predators in Europe for a short while. Now you're telling me we have actual flying snakes.
This is it. Can we pack 2020 up into a suitcase and we just, you know?
Are you making this up?
No. I read about this over the weekend and I thought, as if, do you remember we started off the year, by the way?
I'm calling bullshit on this. No. Come on.
Let me just give you a recap of 2020. Remember we started off the year with murder hornets in the US or somewhere?
Yes,
that's right.
Yes. Well, now flying snakes have been discovered, and supposedly this species has been around for many, many years, first being noted by a British scientist back in the late 1800s. So they are normal-looking snakes, but what makes these different is they have the ability push themselves off the ground.
Say that again. What makes What makes them different is...
is they have the ability to push themselves off the ground. And in the same way snakes glide in water, so they twist and contort their bodies from side to side as they do in water.
This is like snakes on a plane, man.
It is twisted.
Sharknado.
So this type of snake can also do that in the air, and they essentially don't fly, but instead they glide in the air for as far as 78 feet, which is about 24 meters, like, without tumbling out of control.
That is a long, long way to go.
Fuck.
That's far. You get 24 meters.
But also snakes like to be not seen. So it's weird that they're out themselves like this. Usually they like to surprise you, but
God,
I know.
Oh,
if you thought 2020 wasn't bad enough, well, now you know. There are 5 known species of this kind. I won't even get to their names because I'll absolutely butcher them.
Do we only discover them now?
Well, I think they're coming into more public knowledge now. I think probably scientists would have known about this way back when.
Good Lord.
It honestly stopped me in my tracks on Saturday. I was like on my Facebook timeline and I thought, flying snakes? I saw this and I thought, no, this must be not true. And I went about researching it. So how these snakes actually like get off the ground. So they'll push their ridge scales against a tree trunk, for example, and they'll use that rough surface of a tree trunk to maneuver up to a branch. Then they'll dangle their body off the end of the branch.
This is horrible.
They'll contract sharply and then basically spring themselves to launch into
the
air.
They're like those snakes that, you know, those gag gifts where you open up the lid and snakes pop out of it.
Yes.
That's what it's reminding me of.
That is it. Oh. I have had it with these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Yeah.
What is going on?
It's actually the mechanism of how they keep themselves in air is really fascinating as well, though.
You know what? It's fascinating, but I could have lived my life very happily not having to deal with flying snakes. And now there's another thing I got to put on my list of shit to avoid today. Where do these things live? Do you have a specific geographic area so we can at least know when we're in their territory?
We need some kind of warning.
Imagine you're walking, you're just going for a walk with your dog, and then this thing flies out of the tree next to you, and you're like, what the fuck was that? And then suddenly it's wrapping around your face and biting you, and oh no, thank you.
Most of this research was done at Virginia Tech in the United States.
No, but where do the snakes live?
I do not have that information in front of me. I'll sit on the Googler schmoogler quickly.
See, yeah, this is terrible.
Yeah.
This is the worst. This is the worst
Southeastern
information.
Southeastern Asia.
Oh, thank God. When you said South, I got nervous. Then when you said Eastern, I felt a little bit better. And when you said Asia, I was like, okay, that's their problem, not mine.
Yeah, but listen, COVID was their problem too. So who knows?
I'll take my chances with COVID. Thank you very much. Flying snakes, are you insane?
Can we please not have some bizarre group who'll start smuggling this to other countries. Like, this is the last thing we need sent to us.
Yeah.
It's raining snakes. Hallelujah. It's raining snakes.
Oh, no. Thank you very much.
What would happen? Like, this. Yeah. That's
right. Enough of that. Let's talk to Sean. I mean, I'll tell you about this guy before he comes online. So Sean Fuchs is an educator and author. And when you think about some of your early influences, your teachers are right up there, right? Being a teacher is massively important. And we, on this show, we always talk about how great teachers are and we talk about how important they are. And they get to shape young minds. And what goes into that is often more than meets the eye. Now, Sean Fuchs, who he's an educator and leader in some of South Africa's most renowned schools. That's what he did before. He knows all of this too well. He's recently penned his biggest lessons in a life story in his memoir called Fush, like push with an F, because that's obviously what they used to call him, letting readers in on how he's anything but a stereotype.
Yeah. So
let me tell you about his book quickly. He writes about his life as a school rugby star, a soldier, a provincial powerlifter, a renowned water polo coach, a lifelong entrepreneur, dynamic teacher, beloved headmaster, and a gay man who came of age at a time when South African society was a lot more closed-minded than it is today. So he started off at Jeppe High School for Boys, and he headed up as an activist, the SRC of the South African Student Teachers Union, and then he went into the army, and he also had a memorable teaching career. We'll get into all of that with Sean in a moment. He is on the line. It's nice to speak to you, Sean. How are you this morning?
Morning. Good. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Well done on the book, by the way. It seems like a really interesting read. I haven't started it yet, but I looked through the first couple of pages, and it looks like there's a lot going on in this book. What made you decide to write it, besides the fact that you've got all these amazing stories to tell?
Yeah, I think I just got tired of the media focusing purely on the negative. You know, everyone was ready to jump on the Parktown Boys bandwagon and just share the negative stories. And they are just absolutely wonderful stories to be written about schools and experiences in schools. And I think someone needed to put out the positive messages.
I'm so pleased you said that, because I've spoken to a lot of people recently who feel that it's become so easy to tear down institutions and to break things up and to say that things are bad. And everybody's on that bandwagon at the moment. You know, our universities need complete structural reform. Our schools are a disaster. That's not true. And if you speak to most people who went to any of these schools, if you went to a good school, even if you went to an average school, most people remember that time fondly. They remember teachers who actually cared about teaching them. They remember learning things that otherwise they wouldn't have learned. They remember making friends, sometimes for life. I mean, I don't understand why everything needs to be thrown in the rubbish bin now just because there are a couple of bad apples.
I agree 100%. I'd put a challenge out even to you at the moment and say, and I used to say this when I was still the managing director of a group of schools with new teachers induction, and I'd say to you, think of the person that probably had the most impact or influence on your life.
Right.
And nine out of 10 people, that was a teacher.
Absolutely. I remember I was so fond of one of my teachers in particular that when I was invited back to my primary school to speak at their valediction, and it was in another province, so I had to fly there to do it, I said the only condition was that they brought this teacher back, because he'd retired since then and everything else, and I was so happy to see him. You know, he had me reading books of quotations and doing really interesting things, which most of the teachers probably didn't. It was extracurricular stuff in terms of what he told me to read. And I loved that guy. And he absolutely, without a doubt, was an example of the kind of teacher that you're talking about in your book.
Yeah, Gareth, I had an incident about 2 weeks ago, and it was the same thing of suddenly now we're absolutely trashing these institutions. Mm. And it was a past student who had posted on my social media, and when I was headmaster still, there was a racial incident where there was a racial slur used, and we dealt with a student that used it at that point in time. And the student was punished. We'd addressed it with the school. We'd put in everything that we thought was the right thing to do, in line with our value system. We didn't condone it. We didn't accept it. It was absolutely unacceptable. Yet 8 years later, the student chose to completely attack me, call me the most horrible human being, and the fact that I was a racist apologist. Now, there are people who will speak for my career and for what I've stood for, and the book is also very clear on that. It was about creating safe spaces for students. I grew up as a gay person and had to deal with that in the 80s, and trust me, there was enough prejudice. Going out, police raiding clubs when we used to go to the old Mrs. Henderson's or the Dungeon, as sort of in my late teenage years when I was still at Wits or JCE, and just the ongoing kind of prejudices that you faced. So the point is to be called a horrible human being 8 years later, because now suddenly this is appropriate. It's, for me, was absolutely, I just said, I mean, I'm saddened by that.
Let's talk about this for a second, because I see like grievance politics has become everybody's favorite game to play at the moment. And people are even digging up bullshit that they have to go and find in records from 8, 10, 20 years ago, in order to find some reason for them to join some movement that's going on at the moment. It's almost trendy right now. I hope you defended yourself on your social media from this idiot.
Well, I think the language used was completely inappropriate, on certainly on my social media, and I'm not going to justify my actions of 8 years ago, because I believe and I know that I did the right thing as the head of the school.
Sure.
It was never condoned, and we never will condone that, not as human beings. Forget about it, South Africans, just as human beings. We're not going to condone that that kind of behavior. So I did contact her and challenged her behavior, and she came back. The problem is you're not dealing with a rational thinking person. You're not dealing with someone who's prepared to have an open debate and an open discussion on that, which I'm very happy to
do. What did she say when you contacted her, just out of interest? I mean, since this is something we're talking about now.
Well, in her views, in her response, it was my response to her was, this is what we did. I don't believe what you're saying is valid at all, and I'm really saddened by your comments on me as a human being. And her response was, this is typical of a racist apologist, and you're very on PR, and I mean, there was no logic in the reply. There was no logic in any kind of, it was one agenda, and that was it.
So in other words, this person was attention seeking.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of that going on at schools at the moment, because this is a way for people who are otherwise unremarkable to suddenly make themselves interesting. And you know, you hear stories. I saw some video footage of like a whole bunch of girls, well, two or three girls at a prominent school in Pretoria that were all demanding that their teachers get on their knees and ask for apologies over racism or whatever. Or rather ask for forgiveness. And they were screaming and shouting. And like, clearly these girls had mental health issues. There was, the problem was with them. It wasn't with the school.
Yeah, listen, I think we need to relook at how we're running our schools. I'm not saying that doesn't need to be looked at. And I think for many schools, that you're still kind of running a system that's an inheritance from the Industrial Revolution of 300 years ago. And I'm talking about the overall package of the school. So schools going into the post-COVID environment, into a modern sort of, into the 21st century, yes, the schools need to be slightly different. You can't continue to cling to a previous legacy. But that's the overall package that needs to be re-looked at. I don't think we should jump onto one specific bandwagon, one specific issue, and go with it. And in fairness, to a point, 2 weeks ago I was interviewed on a podcast by a guy that was at the same school as me. I was a JP boy. And he had completely the opposite experience to to me.
Oh, really?
So his reality was very different. I loved my school. I loved the masculinity. I loved the rugby. I loved the culture, the tradition. He didn't. He absolutely didn't like it. So his experience was so different to mine. So again, it's people's reality. But with anything, it's how you go about it. Is it not from the French Revolution's philosopher of, I do not agree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it?
Voltaire, yeah. That's the guy. So, Sean, I mean, we'll get into your book in a second, but if you were still running these schools now, and it's a very difficult thing because you have to balance so many interests. You've got parents. Some of them are great people who really want the best for their kids and for other kids at the school. It's not just about them. You get, you know, the teachers who very often are real passionate educators who care about shaping young minds. And you get some teachers who really just, you know, kind of there because they couldn't find anything else to do. And then you get the pupils themselves, the learners, who, again, you get the ones who are really into it and want to spend every minute of every day learning things, and they do as much as they can, and they really drink up the entire school experience and live a life at school which they want. And then you get the ones who are just coasting. And it's hard to balance all of that, especially when you're expected to be some kind of superhuman when you're at the top of the school food chain, right? It's near impossible.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, the phrase of you're never going to please everyone is so is so valid, because you just cannot please everyone. But I mean, I think most heads have a thick skin, have the right kind of ideas in place, and together with your staff, you get on and do it. For me, what it always was about was creating the right community, and 95%, if not more, people buy into that community and that value system, and that's what you need to try and achieve.
Yeah, it's very special when it all does work, and you've had experiences of that which you detail in the book too. Just quickly, I need your opinion on something. You know, we've had this bizarre year of COVID, and I feel so sorry for the matrix of this year. Well, I feel sorry for anyone who's at school this year, because it's going to be a very difficult year to reconcile. You've got less time than ever in the school year to be able to catch up all the work that needs doing. And for many of them, it's going to be a massive struggle. Do you have any advice on how this can be navigated best?
What you can't change, deal with. So, I mean, that's the reality, isn't it? If you're not going to change your environment, deal with it and maximize whatever you can get out of it. There is nothing else that you can do. You know, in a sense, you're probably going to be the most unique group of matrix ever to sort of to have been around, in, certainly in living memory.
That's the truth, certainly. So, all right, you mentioned what it was like being, I mean, you had to go to the army, you were a rugby player, and then you were also this gay guy. And I mean, I don't know when you came out, but as a teacher, did that make it easier or harder in some ways to just deal with ordinary stuff? Because you didn't, you know, the generation you grew up in wasn't as tolerant as the way people are now.
No, it wasn't. So it was tough. It was difficult. And I always make the comment that, and sadly, even today to an extent, but it was very prevalent in at that time. Whatever whenever people spoke about sort of gay, it was negative. So you call someone a fag, you'd say, oh, that's so gay, or whenever you try to insult someone. So you grow up thinking that who you are as a human being is bad, is wrong, is negative, because that's the word that's used. Now, that reinforcement on an ongoing basis really affects you, and I'm not the only one. I think a lot of gay people that have grown up where they are being reinforced like that all the time, where it is negative, and you're desperately looking for positive role models, and more and more are out there now today where there are positive role models. So it was difficult, but I think that for me, the majority was actually just being honest, just being completely transparent about who you are as a person. And it's about being, again, and you'll hear me say this, it's about being a human being. And my students, I mean, I coached the first team rugby, I coached water polo, I went on to coach provincial water polo, and, you know, from following the Parktown incident, the water polo's got such a bad rep at the moment, coming out of that school. But again, there are so many other positive stories, you know. So, again, I look at it like this. So he has an interesting question. My story was positive, completely positive. It's about building up people I have contact through every day, literally, and I mean this, every day, literally. I already had past students this morning messaging me saying they're going to listen to your show and good luck and am I nervous and this and that from around the world, okay?
Yeah.
And they're positive stories where you've kind of mentored and developed people and grown people.
Right.
No one's championing that, but we're going to champion the guy arrested and sitting in jail who also coached the same sport as I did.
Well, it's just unfortunate that, Sean, and this is the reality of humanity, is that we a good news story just doesn't resonate as loudly in our frightened little reptilian brains as the bad stuff does. We love bad news. We don't actually enjoy it. We just respond far more vociferously to it, you know? It's very unfortunate. Yeah. And I feel sorry for those people who've dedicated their lives to education and have to constantly defend not only education, because it seems that there are people who, you know, I mean, you hear former president of this country, Jacob Zuma, saying that he actually thinks education's a bad thing. I mean, it's just insane, right? And honestly, you kind of wonder whether these people who feel that way even grew up on the same planet as the rest of us, who know that these things can be formative and they can set you on the right track for life and they can really help you to build a community around you that is positive, that is constructive, is reasonable. And this is what societies are based on.
Gareth, you again, we go back to the comment about that person that influenced you, and you immediately, 9 out of 10, if not 10 out of 10 times, think of the teacher. The reality is it doesn't matter where you go. Those years in school, in education, will affect you and mold you and shape you to a large extent for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, look at Leanne and Sia. These are perfect examples of people who really paid attention at school. I mean, I know.
Yes.
I know Leanne did, because she's a total nerd. She used to sit at the front of every class, right? And Sia probably did as well.
Now, I will admit now, in apologizing to my teachers, I manipulated quite a couple of them, because I got very close and friendly with them. I'd go and hang out with teachers in their offices when I was bunking science. And go, shouldn't we go and buy some cakes for debating later? Let's go!
I picked that up last night in the technical run with Sia completely. I was like, this student would have been expelled in my school within 5 minutes.
Mr. Sean, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So how's the book been received? Have you had some feedback already from people, and what kind of a response have you got?
The feedback has blown me away. You know, when I started writing it, I'm an academic, my training is a history teacher and then obviously sport, but it's the first book that I've written. I never expected it to make that kind of impact. And if you get a chance and you have a look at the reviews on the website, I mean, they have absolutely blown me away. People that, you know, the common thread goes, It's a page turner. They cannot put it down, and really just laughing, crying. So the response has been fantastic, which has been great for me. The frustration, of course, is the lockdown, because part of my goal was to get into the schools and to have talks about inclusion, about diversity, and have the conversations that actually need to be taking place now. You know, 2 weeks ago, St. John's and some other schools flew the Pride flag because it was Pride Month. And my point is, yes, that's fine. But what conversations are you having? Does anyone know where Pride comes from? Yeah. Did they explain the history? What is it about? So it's all very well doing that, but and that's the part that I think at this point I'm really quite sad and frustrated with, is that I can't get into the schools, I can't get out to communities, to organizations, companies, it doesn't matter, and have the conversation. So yes, I would love far more sales. And that's been quite slow, but it is what it is right now. The book is timeless, so certainly we will continue pushing it, and hopefully when we get some sort of normality, we can sort of get out there and do our good launches and get into the schools.
Fantastic. Well, listen, I wish you the best of luck with it, and congratulations on publishing this, on having it put out there. And I think lots of people are going to read it, not just your past pupils and people who knew you, but a lot of people who are interested in education. It's always good to get someone's perspective, someone who has as much experience as you clearly do. So thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
What a pleasure. That's Sean Fuchs, who's he's the former boss of a number of schools. I mean, I can go through it. He's got an MBA in Business School Netherlands. He has a website of his own, shaunfuchs.co.za, if you want to go and have a look at that. And he had some really interesting stories to tell, all of them in the book. Go and take a look. Very, very cool. Okay. So, Sia?
Very, very good.
Did you feel like you were talking to your headmaster there?
I actually had to note that my posture is a little straight right now. I did. I had to sit up a little. No. That was uncomfortable for me.
We had a moment where I was trying to readjust my screen because I can see a glare behind me. And Sia picked that up. And the two of us started giggling like kids in a classroom. And we were literally the kids in the classroom.
You were.
To turn off our cameras.
But it's so
amazing to, you know, I often remember my teachers as being quite linear and not very sort of two-dimensional. They kind of came in, taught the class and left.
Yeah.
And they were either nasty or nice. You never got something in between.
Yeah.
And just to see someone who's so experienced and has so much life experience around him and still, after so many years of testing and adversity, he's still going and he's still so positive. It's really great.
Yeah, it's such an overused term nowadays, but you really see his passion. Like, it's more than just, okay, coming in and getting through the curriculum or reprimanding kids. No, he's actually invested in, you know, shaping these young minds. And it's really cool.
It's great to see also that there are people standing up for the good that schools do, because you do hear a lot of this breaking down. You know, it's amazing to me. There's this destruction that's going on around us of everything, of history, because it's inconvenient and not everybody's cup of tea, of institutions, whether they be, you know, things that really are outdated, like gentlemen's clubs and that kind of thing, or the modern idea of a school and how that's changed. And some people saying, well, we've got to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And here's a guy who understands, because he's been at every important level when it came to making decisions. This guy understands how valuable this stuff is. And honestly, I've got to say, without school, you don't have that first step into anything. In fact, it's regularly been said that there are three things you need to do if you want to spend your life not being perpetually poor. And they are, number one, finish school. Number two, do not have a child before you're married or before you've decided to have a child responsibly. And usually with someone else. You can't really do that on your own. It's not as effective. And I know that's going to piss off a lot of people, because the truth is that two parents just raise a child better than one. Whether you like it or not, that's the truth. And the third thing is that you've got to find a job. In order to get a job and in order to pass school, you need to actually go to school. So what Sean is saying is pretty damn obvious, and it's so fundamental to where you start off. You don't have to be the best student, but you just have to finish school. And, I mean, obviously I'm biased. He's a history teacher, and history was one of my favorite subjects at school. But most people don't study history because they find it boring, and maybe they have a bad teacher. If you get a good teacher in history, they just help you figure out context. And being able to understand context is massively important, because then when everyone else looks like they're losing their mind because of the news of the day or something that's happened in current events, you can have a much more sage, much more sensible, much more well thought through point of view on things, because you're not reacting just to the events of the day. You're mm-hmm. reacting to mm-hmm. their context in the whole story of humanity, which,
yeah.
again, history, can, it's the only subject you do at school that can teach you anything like that. And it has been absolutely invaluable to me every step of the way.
I must have had a bad teacher because I got a G for history.
Oi, Leanne. Oh,
sure. Wait, G. A, B, C, D,
Are you sure they weren't talking about your breast size?
I wanted to take history. I was in two minds of which extra subject to take on the last one that I had to choose.
Yeah.
And I chose history. And that year I got a G for it. And they said, it's recommended that Leanne start history on the lower grade.
Oh, no.
And that's when I realized, I need to change things up here.
But, don't those comments stay with you, hey?
Yeah, they do. But, I was getting A's and B's and C's everywhere else.
Okay.
So it wasn't the be all in the... the be all in the...
Be
end.
All.
No, I do think that a bad teacher can poison you, just like a good one can inspire you. I mean, mathematics for me was always... the worst, until I ended up with a great maths teacher in matric, and she, I don't know what she did or whether it happened in spite of all the previous teachers, but suddenly I developed this love for maths, and from then on it was just fantastic. Then wow. I mean, my marks went up from a D to a B.
There's definitely something that has to fall into place, something that needs to click when it comes to maths.
And it's hard because kids are all so different, right? Imagine you're in charge of a whole class of, like, I don't know how poor teachers cope these days, because it's not just, 10 people in a class. It's like 40, maybe even more in some classes.
I have friends with kids who are now starting school or they're in school, and they're absolutely petrified of when the kids come to them for maths homework help.
Rightfully so. Look, let me tell you, my maths didn't click, it didn't diskim, it didn't pick and pay, it didn't woolies, it just didn't.
Well,
it just didn't.
I'll tell you something, it must be really hard to be a teacher for a number of reasons, but one of the other reasons is, if you've got a class of like 40 people, and you've got 5 complete delinquents in the class, like people whose parents really kind of had sex and made them, and then from there they've kind of had to fend for themselves, those sort of people, we all know them. Don't pretend you don't know someone like that. When you were at school, there were definitely at least 5 delinquents in your class, and the teachers have to spend 90% of the time just pacifying the delinquents, which means that everybody else gets ignored, or we all have to wait for the delinquents to be dealt with, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
We should just have delinquent schools for those people.
Well,
they should be educated with the rest of us. No, but I mean, like, we have special schools which are there for people who have learning disabilities, or we have special classes for those people. But that's a different thing. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the delinquents, like the ones who kind of flick snot balls at the front of the class and fart loudly in the back of the class and shout and make noises and. Those ones.
Yeah, but by sharing your classroom with people like that, you get to learn and prepare for the fact that one day you might share your office with someone like that.
Actually,
good point. Okay, I take it all back. Mm-hmm. You've just schooled me.
If we were schooled around perfect people all the time, we'd get a freaking shock when we got out into the real world.
All right, you know what? You've just made so much sense. I can't argue with you.
I know. I should have been a headmistress.
You would have been a great headmistress. Headmistress Leanne Moll is coming down the corridor.
With her long cane.
If you don't get out the way, she'll kick you out the way.
I tell you,
no one would look for shit with you.
No.
Good point.
All right, everybody. That's a wrap on this morning. I hope you've had a good time. I've certainly enjoyed this Monday. And we will see you tomorrow, bright and early at 6 o'clock on cliffcentral.com. Have an excellent day. Oh, by the way, Bulelo asked me to just remind you that he's got a guest on this evening's sports show. They've got former Protea all-rounder Alan Dawson joining them tonight on Cliff Central Sports, so don't miss that. Excellent.
Nice.
All right, have a good day. Cheers.
CliffCentral.com.